present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the employment section of The Guardian, read by Charlotte Green.
The Adult Dyslexia Organisation is an organisation run by dyslexics for dyslexics and all those concerned with dyslexia. We require an information officer.
Thanks to Mark Stevens of Minchin Hampton for sending us that. Let's meet the teams now. On my right, Captain Andy Hamilton welcomes back Linda Smith. And on my left, a warm welcome for the returning Alan Corran and his guest, journalist and author of Not the Alan Clark Diary, Peter Bradshaw. Andy, why is proceeding by stealth not always the best way forward?
Well, I presume this is a question about the most amusing story of the week, Kosovo. This is the story that the Serbs claimed a great success in shooting down a stealth bomber. As far as they took away bits of the wing so they could see how the stealth bomber works. As if they could do it like Jurassic Park, you know. Oh, we've got a bit of the wing, we can build our own now, guys. Obviously, it's blown a little bit of a hole in the credibility of the stealth bomber, because it does look as if they knew it was there.
I never understood why they built it, because they spent $300 billion developing a plane that was supposed to be invisible. So they didn't really have to build it. You just stealth it. We got this invisible plane.
Apparently, it shows up on the radar like a bee, apparently, the stealth bomber. But then I imagine a 48-ton giant bee in your airspace.
But also,
it's quite suspicious. They could have lured it in with a huge jam jar of sugary water.
But also, if you look on your radar, if your radar supervisor comes to you and says, anything suspicious, you say, well, no, there's a civil airplane here and there's this bee doing 300 miles an hour.
Anyway. What was that pilot thinking of, driving such an expensive plane through such a rough area? I've got a nice motor. I don't park it in Catford.
Well, Yugoslav radar managed to shoot down an American stealth bomber, despite Pentagon claims that the plane is almost invisible. A US spokesman further reported that President Clinton is almost monogamous. 2 points to Andy. Linda, who will be forced to pay the price for setting minimum standards?
Oh, it's the minimum wage. It's the minimum wage, that's it. We're going to have a minimum wage, despite all our protests about, no, we don't want it, that's too good for the likes of us. Apparently, we're going to be brought into line with Europe and having this minimum wage thing, but there are a few little sort of caveats with it. It's not actually available to the very low paid. Well, because that would be mad, wouldn't it? It cost a fortune.
You laugh. 23 years ago, when the News Quiz was already well underway, Barry Took and I felt that after some years we hadn't been getting enough money.
Yeah.
And we complained to the BBC, and they gave us an extra 75p. Don't talk to me about minimum wage. Sit here in this studio.
I think that's very good for one series, actually.
If he's going to play the old fart, I'm going to start now. Because I started on Weekending on £2 a minute. On a two-minute commission, I was on £4 a week. So we had it hard in those days, mate.
I was paid by the laugh on Weekending. I owed them money.
Yes, younger workers aged 18 to 21 will get £3 an hour, while those over 21 will get the sack. Peter, who's forked out £180 million to stop Rover leaving a nasty mess?
It's the Bayerische Motorwerken of Munich, surely, who are now in charge of our native indigenous automobile industry.
Wonderful cars.
Wonderful cars.
Can't have died out of the sun.
Yes.
Yes, that's the answer. The government stumped up £180 million to ensure the future of Rover's Longbridge car plant. Rover was thrown into confusion when its former chairman, Walter Hasselkus, chose to resign. Explaining his decision, Mr. Hasselkus said it was better to walk than wait to be pushed. A situation many Rover drivers are all too familiar with. Two points to Peter. Alan, listen to this.
It must be sad to live in the house alone. It must be sad to live in the house alone.
Alan, who will soon no longer be lording it over the rest of us.
Oh, I thought it was a spaniel that threw itself off Beachy Head. We're doing that one. Well, we might.
We couldn't find a record called Spaniel Throw.
No, I know. Went after a seagull. May come up later. Now, this is about the House of Lords, as you so rightly say, and the song did, and what kind of an idiot would I be if I didn't know the answer? Do you know the answer to this? They're terribly complicated voting regulations, and, they're just in the process of being scaled down. It's the House of Lords dismantling.
I thought they'd already done that. Keep forgetting and coming back.
Well, they have to keep waking people up to tell them
they've done it. No, we've got rid of you.
People there who don't know it's happened.
Are they retraining them in any way?
The less inbred ones are going first, and they're gradually, until they get down to East Anglia, when carefully shepherded to the door by cousins and people with three heads.
I liked Lord Malmesbury, who said in the debate that he thought the hereditary principle was very good because it brought young people into Parliament. He's 91. And the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we start round two with a small lad spotted in the Oxford Times.
Baby bath, playpen and food blender for baby pureeing. £30 the lot.
So Ruth's got a Babington for sending in that. Andy, which right royal form of transport is soon to become the people's people carrier?
Is this a story involving John Prescott?
Yes.
This is a story that I started to read and then couldn't be bothered. wish I had now. Something's happening to the Royal Train.
Yes.
Malud. And John Prescott's in charge of it. It will lead to lots of very funny cartoons where he's depicted as the Fat Controller. And he's doing something with the Royal Train like he is hiring it out for functions, stag nights. Mostly, we'll be able to ring up Buckhouse and say, can I have the Royal Train Thursday week? My mate's over from Amsterdam. We're all going on a bit of a bender. We'll clean it up afterwards. But that's about as outrageous a guess.
It's absolutely spot on, though.
Is it? Yeah. I should be Minister for Transport. That was almost a policy that I came up
with. But all the royal transport's going that way now, isn't it? They've already done Britannia. That's moored at Greenwich. It's a £4.99 Sunday carvery now.
Prince Andrew's Mickey Mouse tricycle is probably available any minute now.
Yes, Deputy Prime Minister John Prescott has taken control of the Royal Train, which can now be used for non-royal outings. The number of carriages has been reduced from 14 to 8. Mr Prescott denied that the other six had been sold off to his son and turned into council flats. The train was said to have cost more than £7 million a year to run, with extra costs caused by the specially commissioned bacon, lettuce, tomato and swan-flavoured sandwiches. Linda, where did the Court of Appeal find more than a McNugget of truth this week?
Yes, it's the McLibel thing again, isn't it? These two sort of veggie terrorist people have had a bit of a sort of partial victory now, because there's been a change. The law lords have decided that although McDonald's are not responsible for the destruction of the rainforest and Lennox Lewis losing that fight, they are responsible for everything else.
Makes you wonder what sort of clown is running the place, really. The Court of Appeal ruled that it was not libelous to say that the fast food giant had been cruel to cattle, though that's no way to talk about McDonald's customers. The company has pledged to comply with the court's order as soon as possible, once their lordships have decided whether they want fries with that. So, Peter, listen to this.
Deep in a kiss, my Melissa is sighing. So deep in her arms that I almost could cry. Whatever the weather, we lie close together, together forever, Melissa and me.
Melissa and Me by Gene Pitney. Peter, which virus threatens the world of e-business with more than a cold?
Oh, now, I know this. This is this sinister pornographic virus, which sinister kind of hacker terrorists send to people's personal computers. And it sends pornography to everybody on their address book list. And then it sends the same amount of pornography to everybody on their address book list. At least that's the excuse that all these employers are telling their employers when they find stacks of hardcore porn downloaded onto their computer.
But pornography be a virus?
Yes.
Blokes going into shops going, oh, could you reach me that down off the top shelf? I've got a little touch of porn today.
I hate computers. Although, if people want to talk to me on my website, they can. My website is please/leave.me/alone.uk.
The Melissa virus consists of a list of pornography sites which emails copies of itself from computer to computer. One victim was the governor of North Dakota, whose computer sent out copies of the XXX rated list to constituents and party donors on his apparent authority, when they should, of course, have come from President Clinton. Many computer users have been horrified to find their screens suddenly filled with low-grade pornography, but ITV had to fill the gap left by News at 10 somehow. Alan, who was painting on a broad political canvas this week.
It's my notional son. Yes, it's William Hague.
Oh, yes.
He's taken on a newspaper editor to be his Alastair Campbell, and the newspaper editor thought it would be a very good idea if William went out and did a painting. And it's rather, his painting's done by elephants with a brush up their bum, you know, or gorillas. It's a rainbow over a coal field. I don't know what he's trying to tell us, what his political message is. Pot of gold at the end of William Hague. But there he was with his little tree-domed head sitting on the back of the Times, having drawn a rainbow and two stick-like people and a coal mine. He is entirely talentless.
And it was surrounded, wasn't it, by pictures from real infants, from real which were children. Much more sophisticated. Oh,
even as we speak, are being jostled into the Conservative leadership.
The painting showed a blue sky, green hills, a white colliery, and opposite that, hundreds of tiny little stick riot police baton-charging miners. William Hague admitted to children that he's the second Tory leader of recent years to be colourblind. He has problems with his yellows and oranges, while Mrs. Thatcher had trouble with reds and blacks. Mr. Hague says he's looking forward to the Modern British Art Exhibition as the inspiration for his next work, which will be Ken Clark and Michael Portillo floating in a vat of formaldehyde. So the scores at the end of round two are still everybody neck and neck with 8 points. And we start round three with a cutting from the Stroud News and Journal.
Police are calling for witnesses to a hit-and-run accident which occurred on Cane Cross Road in Stroud. The driver of the car, described as large, red and fairly new, stopped briefly before driving off.
Thanks to Sonia Hickings of King Stanley for that. Andy, why have women always come second in the human race?
This sounds like a scientific survey about women's brains.
No.
No. Women's bodies.
They were at home having fainting fits and wearing tight bodices and doing embroidery while men were limbering up in the 19th century, which is why women run the marathon slightly more slowly than men and can't pole vault over anything more than their children. but now they're all catching up. What they were basically saying is that women would be, I was going to say, as fit as us. Women would be able to outrun me if they'd started earlier.
Because they weren't allowed to do very much.
Well, George Eliot failed a drug test. He ran ran a 400 metres too fast and gave the game away. Charlotte Bronte blew the whistle on him.
Well, there you are. That proves their theory, you see, because they did think, the Victorians, that if women did anything more strenuous than, quote, light beanbag throwing, they would turn into men, hence George Eliot.
Women, it is claimed, are not as good at sport as men because doctors have misled them about their physiques. False information telling them they could never be any good at sport has been passed down through the generations to female athletes and male English cricketers. Linda, here's your music.
Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday to make our dreams come true for me and you.
Linda, who will soon be turning pink in the British summer sun.
This is about gay tourism. This is about the British Tourist Board trying to appeal to gay punters to come to Britain and have their holiday here. Now, in one way, this is a really good thing, I think, because it will just wind up your Anne Widdecombes no end. So that's the good part of it. The bad part of it is it just seems a bit of a Swiss to me, because there's nothing specially gay about Britain. Every country in the world's got gay writers, gay pubs, gay bars, etc. There's nothing specially gay about Britain, so I think it's just a Swiss to try and get people to come here, and they're just making normal things, just ordinary everyday things that all tourists do, sound gay by just putting the word gay in front of them. So it'll be, come to Britain and enjoy a traditional English gay cream tea. Visit the legendary gay Canterbury Cathedral.
Margaret Thatcher's a gay icon. They could go past her place, couldn't they, in Mayfair?
Yes, she'd love that. She'll have the dogs out.
It's like you just shout decorating tips as they go past. With those cushions? Surely not.
Yes. There's loads of people are gay icons, Simon. I'm a gay icon.
Are you?
Yeah.
How does it manifest
There's
itself?
There's only one gay man, he lives in Rochdale, but I'm his icon, apparently. He's got this stained glass picture of me up on his...
Alan, have you ever been a gay icon?
Yes, of course you have. With legs like those.
When I was 14 and travelling on the 29 bus from, as it happened, from Cockfosters, I was going to the 1374 Cockfosters Cub Group, and a man with an Alsatian got up and sat next to me, came upstairs, and the Alsatian put its nuzzle in my lap. And the man said, "You're a Boy Scout." That's as close as I've come.
2 points there. Peter, which Lovies this week, bar none, were voicing their complaints?
Well, as I understand it, Mr. Trevor Nunn, artistic director of the Royal National Theatre, has got into terrible trouble by putting microphones on all his actors, because his actors have, I'm sorry to say, neglected the ancient art of projection from the diaphragm, and nobody can hear what on earth they're saying.
It'd be good if they forget to turn the mics off as they go off stage. I think that would be critical. And you'd hear them gossiping and moaning about the audience, going, "Good God, love, where do they bust them in from?"
We went to the theatre the other night, and someone started talking to his mate on the phone.
What, on stage?
No. No, it was a very avant-garde production of Macbeth, yes.
Same. Is that Burnham Wood? Can he come over to Dunsinane? Yeah.
What's so clever about shouting, anyway? This ability of acting. Oh, no, they're trained to shout. It's terrible, that kind of acting, isn't it? Robert Shaw, he could spoil any film with his shouty acting.
He was right to shout in Jaws, though, because it was a shark, wasn't it? Oh. I think that was the right choice.
Very nice.
2 points to Peter Allen, who can't tell the spread from the trees.
This is not about this new margarine at 300 quid. Well, I don't know what to do with the trees. Now, I think it's the Swedes who are always inventing things that are good for us. And you would think, why would you want to have a longer life in Sweden? But they... they have now produced a margarine, which is, I don't know what you do, it's very expensive. You have to boil the whole of Sweden and you get a tiny pot of this. And it makes us all live for a very long time. It's an anti-cholesterol and it reams your pipes out and does wonders for your bowel actions. And it's going to cost a great deal of money.
It costs £2.50 a tonne.
Oh, you've got some, have you?
Yeah. Oh, it's magic. Oh, magic, yes.
The Finnish paper manufacturer Raisio has launched Benecol, a margarine made from wood pulp, which its manufacturer claims can reduce cholesterol. It's hoped it will be a great success in Europe's cholesterol capital, Glasgow. Apparently there's nothing quite like a couple of tubs of it deep-fried in batter to go with your Mars bar. Raisio's market research suggested Britons would quickly accept the idea of consuming vast amounts of reconstituted Nordic wood pulp. Just look at the number of IKEA stores we've got. So the scores at the end of round three are Andy and Linda with a creditable 11, but Alan and Peter now in the lead with 14 points. Before we start the final round, here's an item seen in the Daily Mail.
Prince Philip to the smiling black man he met at the Commonwealth Day party. And what exotic part of the world do you come from? Lord Taylor of Warwick, former Tory candidate for Cheltenham, replied, "I'm from Birmingham."
Thanks to Ron Osmond of Caversham for that. Andy, listen to this.
No sex, no drugs, no wine, no women, no fun, no sin, no you, no wonder it's dark. Everyone around me is a total stranger. Everyone avoids me like a cyclone ranger. Everyone. That's why I'm turning Japanese, I think I'm turning
Andy, which quiz contestant showed a yen for success?
Oh, well, this was a story that managed to be both grotesque and comic. I haven't seen the film, but those of you who have will know The Truman Show is a story of a man who doesn't know he's being filmed as part of a kind of ongoing popular soap. And this was a Japanese comic comedian whose name meant aubergine, who lived, I think it was a year, wasn't it? He lived in this place and didn't realise he was being filmed and suffered all kinds of indignities because it was a sort of quiz format built around it. He had to get something right before he got any food. I got a bit lost, to be honest, in the rules. I'm sure I'll see Chris Tarrant ridiculing it soon and that'll make it all clear to me. But just when you thought no one could make TV any cheaper and sort of more sordid, somehow they managed it. And Carlton have bought it. They bought the format. Another source of employment goes down the drain.
I believe there was film of him naked, but they had a kind of aubergine-shaped kind of logo thing over his lunchbox.
Yeah. That's quite tasteful, actually, in an otherwise questionable format, I think. That's the nearest they've got to showing taste.
It's true. If you look at the dirty film channel in a Japanese hotel, they have, over the rude bits, they have little building blocks which are put there to stop you seeing what's going on. It's a sort of leg-over-leg-over situation.
Does it cost you a lot to fly to Japan to watch this channel?
Well, every week. Yes, of course it is. Yes, a Tokyo comedian called Nasubi spent more than a year unwittingly being filmed naked as part of an excruciating Japanese quiz show called Susuna Denpa Shohen, which roughly translates as Noel's House Party. His challenge was to enter as many magazine competitions as possible and make his living from whatever goods he won. One highlight, this is true, showed him dancing for joy after winning his first rolls of toilet paper in 10 months. The following week, he won a toilet. Linda, who cast his net far and wide for a story without peer?
A peer?
Mm-hmm.
With a net?
Yes. He was into the net.
Oh, computer. Sorry, it's a computer story. I don't do computers.
Well, only marginally.
It's Weymouth. He of the Wifelets.
Oh, yes.
And he's put his sexual details on the net, yes. Rather like the Japanese bloke. He's spread his aubergines wide throughout the land. I don't know why anybody wanted to read about him, but... Yes, he's that bearded fool from Longleat.
Have I have seen the loins of Longleat? People say the internet's boring.
So he'll be really annoyed if he gets this pornography virus, won't he? Because it'll force
his
stuff off.
Well, he won't really notice, will he?
He'll be lucky if it's the only virus he does get.
Some who logged onto the site said the story contained so many graphic descriptions of sex penned by a lord of the realm that they were shocked that it hadn't been written by Melvin Bragg. Alan, how does Uncle Stanley's pet theory match personalities to their pooches?
It's not Uncle Stanley. He is no relative of mine at all. There's this bloke, Stanley Corran. There are two, only two, apart from my children, who are graft in a way to keep me and their mother in pension money. So the two other Corrans, the Corran ear piercer, which you can buy at all good ear piercing establishments, and this chap, Stanley Corran, who's a Canadian. Don't know him, no relative. But he lines people up with their dogs. He says Buster is very like Roy Hattersley and stuff like that. No, I mean, it was only Hattersley and Buster that actually looked like one another and had the same political views and the same attitude towards people. But nothing else really matched. But he claims that people, I mean, it's his whole thing, people look like their pets. William Hague has a golf ball.
According to Dr. Corran, the writer Julie Birchall should own a Rottweiler, but she prefers an Alsatian. She said, I'm very much like an Alsatian. I am loyal and violent. She forgot to add that, like her pets, she tends to make a horrible mess all over the newspapers. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this was sent in by Ted Shepherd of Thelwall. It's from the Yorkshire Post. Police officers who advised a pensioner to take the numbers of suspicious cars in her street were stunned when she presented them with the registration plates.
Linda.
I've got a cut writing here from Adrian Legg of Windermere. It's from the Sunday Times. It describes a nightmare journey on Aeroflot that ended with this episode. The captain was walking through economy, smiling and nodding, when he turned to see the second pilot emulating his charm in first class, he writes. In his eagerness to socialise, he had let the security door lock behind him, and it took six passengers and a fire axe to break in and regain control from the autopilot.
Peter, this is a cutting sent in by Mr. Peter Lovett of Faversham in Kent, and it's from the AA Members Magazine. When Magdalena Piantini realised she had forgotten to wish her son good luck in his driving test, she set off to put it right. His test had already started, but not to be deterred, she set off in pursuit. She finally caught up with her son on a dual carriageway. "Good luck, my darling Giuseppe," she bellowed at her son through the window of her car, at which point her distracted son spun off the road into a wall, breaking both his driving examiner's legs. Alan.
By bizarre coincidence, I have a driving story as well from the Leicester Mercury. It says the court heard that Mr. Walsh drove his BMW at speeds of up to 80 miles an hour in pursuit of Mr. Hammond's van, before pulling alongside and forcing him off the road. Mr. Walsh then jumped out and, after kicking the side panels of the van, broke the driver's window and struck him several blows with his fist until passing motorists stopped and restrained him. Mr. Walsh, 43, is a consultant in stress management.
And before we leave you, here's an item spotted in the Telegraph by Tim and Sue Sherman of Wells.
A drugs message on children's pencils didn't turn out the way campaigners in New York intended. Hundreds of pencils bearing the slogan, "Too cool to do drugs," were sent to primary schools in the state. But once they'd been sharpened a few times, the message read, "Cool to do drugs." And after they'd been used for a while longer, the message became, "Do drugs."
So the final scores are Andy and Linda with 13 points, but Alan and Peter, the winners, with 19 points. And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith and Peter Bradshaw. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson, and George Poles. And the producer was John Rolfe.